From ABC News, world news this week. I'm Chuck Sievertson, ABC News. Listen.
Those who are fortunate and lucky in life, those who are great are those who leave something behind.
He was my partner and friend.
I cannot go forward. I will not be a candidate for president.
We can let the deficits continue and smother our children's future, or we can start to work on a balanced budget.
We have earned the right to keep the Browns.
Let us once again humbly thank our veterans for answering the call to duty.
The people and stories that made headlines when World News This Week continues.
If you wear contact lenses, we'd like you to meet 800-800-LENS customer Phyllis Porter of San Bernardino, California.
Most amazing to me is that I can get the same contact lenses for half the price, and the contact lenses come right to me. So it's very exciting, and it's incredible to me that I can get the same contact lenses for half the price. And all I have to do is call 800-800-LENS, order my contact lenses, give them my prescription over the telephone. I don't even have to pay for the phone call, and it's wonderful service, and I'm amazed at the price, that it's half the price as I would pay if I went anywhere else.
Save up to 50% on your lenses, not to mention your time. Whether you wear hard or soft lenses, disposables, gas permeables, or torics, replacing your contact lenses has never been easier. As long as your prescription is current, 800-800-LENS will keep you from seeing double and paying double. Call us at 1-800-800-LENS.
Yitzhak Rabin's memory evoked a range of emotions, from the tortured sobs of this Israeli to the triumphant celebration of these Arabs in Beirut. For the majority of Israelis, the assassination of their prime minister was a personal tragedy. Over a million people, some with tears streaming down their cheeks, filed by Rabin's casket in Knesset Square.
He was a strong man, incredibly determined, a hero for our people.
You know, I'm 40 years old, and I've lived through three wars and all the terrible things that I lived through, and this man actually tried to stop that.
I came to pay respects to a man who, I think, knowingly risked his life to help bring us peace, and I feel very grateful.
The measure of Yitzhak Rabin's stature was seen Monday at the largest ever gathering of world leaders in the Middle East. Among his eulogizers, Egypt's President Hosni Mubarak, setting foot in Israel for the first time.
I could say that the best memorial for Yitzhak Rabin is to continue what he started, which is the peace process, because as we mentioned several times, peace is so precious for the whole people all over the world.
Jordan's King Hussein hadn't been in Jerusalem since his country lost the city to Yitzhak Rabin's army in 1967.
Those who are fortunate and lucky in life, those who are great are those who leave something behind. And you are such a man, my friend.
PLO chief Yasser Arafat agreed not to attend the funeral for fear his presence could add instability. But the man who brought Arafat and Rabin together for their historic 1993 peace accord was President Bill Clinton.
The American people mourn with you in the loss of your leader. And I mourn with you, for he was my partner and friend.
And perhaps the most eloquent tribute came from someone unknown on the world stage, Rabin's freckled 18-year-old granddaughter.
No one knows the great pain that I'm feeling. The ground was taken from under our feet, and we're trying somehow to make something of this void, and I have not yet succeeded.
With a 21-gun salute, Yitzhak Rabin's remains were lowered into his grave. Israelis were now ready to focus on finding out what motivated his killer. For Leah Rabin, accused gunman Yigal Amir was unworthy even of her contempt. He was sick, she said. It was her husband's political enemies whom she blamed.
There was a climate that allowed it to happen. A climate of enormous violence, talking violence, speaking violently. There was a rally, a Likud rally, in Jerusalem, not too long ago. And there they put the figure of Yitzhak, my husband, in a uniform of a Nazi leader. And Mr. Netanyahu was there. He later sort of talked against it, but he was there and he didn't stop it.
But the man whom Leah Rabin blamed, Likud leader Benjamin Netanyahu, told ABC's Peter Jennings he was being scapegoated.
How do you feel when Israelis accuse you of contributing to a climate of extremism?
Well, it's simply not true, because I have consistently, over the last 2 years, and especially the last year, at every opportunity, when faced with these, with people shouting, Rabin is a traitor, Rabin is a murderer, I've shouted them down. We silenced them.
In fact, Yigal Amir was not a member of Likud, but part of a small extremist group called Eyal. He was a university student who police say was part of a larger conspiracy to kill government leaders and target Palestinians.
The Israeli government is getting tough, rounding up Jewish extremists who have publicly praised Prime Minister Rabin's assassination. At least six people have been arrested, most of them settlers. They're also considering toughening up the law to make it easier to prosecute militants for incitement. Meanwhile, Israel's acting prime minister has vowed to keep the peace process moving, saying the Israeli withdrawal from West Bank towns and villages will go ahead as planned, and Israelis still caught up in their own grief and disbelief are trying to get to grips with what has happened here. For many, that means simply coming to pray or stand at the grave of Prime Minister Rabin. Linda Alban, ABC News, Jerusalem.
Elections will be held in Israel next November. Until then, Shimon Peres has moved from foreign minister to prime minister. As for Yigal Amir, if convicted, the maximum penalty he faces is life in prison. He led the fight against Saddam Hussein, but Colin Powell isn't to battle for the presidency.
I cannot go forward. I will not be a candidate for president or for any other elective office in 1996.
Despite polls showing the retired general could beat President Clinton, Powell said an election race now was not in his heart.
To offer myself as a candidate for president requires a commitment and a passion to run the race and to succeed in the quest. The kind of passion and the kind of commitment that I felt every day of my 35 years as a soldier. A passion and commitment that despite my every effort, I do not yet have for political life.
With his wife Alma at his side, Colin Powell denied his safety or the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin were factors in their decision.
I had no concerns about my personal security. I travel widely around the country, usually by myself, and I had no particular concerns.
I think everybody has known that I have had a concern, but I want you to know that it certainly played no part in his decision.
Powell did officially acknowledge he was Republican and that he would work to broaden the Republican Party. The general also said he would not consider the vice presidency.
I know my decision will disappoint many who have supported me. I thank them once again from the bottom of my heart. And I ask for their understanding.
I think his time was now. I mean, I think he could have won it now. Who knows? 4 years in politics is a lifetime. Who knows what's going to happen in 2000?
That's Tim Bush, former chairman of the Citizens for Powell Committee in New Hampshire. But not everyone was sorry to see the general take a seat.
The two huge sucking sounds you hear are collective sighs of relief at the White House and at the Dole presidential headquarters.
American University political science professor Alan Lichtman. Officially, the White House had no reaction to Powell announcement. As for candidate Dole,
I think in all the polls, most of his support was coming from me, so hopefully it'll come back where it belongs, right?
Former Governor Lamar Alexander hopes not. He says the race is now between him and Dole. Candidate Phil Graham sees it as a two-man race for the Republican nomination, too, himself and Dole.
It is now clear that the field is set and that either Bob Dole is going to be the nominee for president of the Republican Party, or I'm going to be the nominee.
Stay tuned. The New Hampshire primary is February 20th. Of course, there may not be a government by then. This week, Uncle Sam came as close as he's ever come to running out of money. If Congress and the president don't agree on a way to extend the federal debt limit, Washington will have to stop spending money on anything but what's called essential services. House Speaker Newt Gingrich admits that the threat of government default is a negotiating ploy.
We want the president to sit down and negotiate. I mean, the president doesn't have the right to sit at some golf course and make threats about the American people, close the American government, disrupt the bond markets with threats, and then say he will do nothing, but he'll be glad to sign what we do as work.
But that work has so far included a number of Republican musts that President Clinton says are must-nots.
I don't want to shut down basic government services for the American people, but I can't allow that to be used to force us to accept extreme budget measures that would violate our basic values as a nation and undermine the long-term welfare of the American people.
Senate Majority Leader Bob Dole said the goal is to balance the budgets.
We can let the deficits continue and smother our children's future, or we can start to work on a balanced budget.
But leaders of the financial community were getting clearly antsy about the Republican tactic. Jordan Goodman, Wall Street correspondent of Money Magazine, laid out the battle lines.
This is an enormous game of chicken. On one hand, the Republicans say they want to put us on the glide path for a balanced budget in 7 years and are unwilling to negotiate on having that happen. This is part of the contract with America. And they want these huge cuts in Medicare increases and tax cuts and so on. On the other hand, President Clinton is firmly opposed to slowing down Medicare increases, the tax cuts, the capital gains cuts, and various other things in this budget package.
And bond analyst David Jones of Aubrey G. Lanston Incorporated noted that it takes only one default on one bond to send the money markets into permanent turmoil.
That would cause a major shakeup in our financial markets. Interest rates would likely to move up. The stock market would likely to move down, and the dollar would move down as well, which would make dollar assets less attractive to foreign investors.
Whatever form of government we have this week, we had elections for it, and considering the Republican landslide of 1994, there was a remarkable amount of good news for Democrats. Paul Patton was elected governor of Kentucky.
Kentucky has said no to cuts in Medicare and school lunches. Kentucky said no to the contract on America.
Democrats also maintain control of the Virginia legislature in spite of a strong GOP effort to change that situation. But in Mississippi, it was another hurrah for Republican Governor Kirk Fordyce, the first Mississippi governor since the Civil War to be eligible for a second term.
Let's put the divisiveness behind us. Let's put all of the ugliness that's been so evident in the last few days aside, and let's go back to the spirit of 91 and go together forward!
In the end, the 1995 elections didn't mean as much to the nation as the 1996 elections will. But they did mean something. ABC News political director Hal Bruno.
Had the Republicans achieved their goals in this election, then everybody would be saying that the Republican steamroller that began in 1994 was still rolling. I think the most you can say is that as far as this election is concerned, it looks like it slowed down a bit. That doesn't mean that it's completely run out of steam, and it's always risky to take an off-year election and try and project those results into the upcoming presidential year, because usually it doesn't follow the same pattern.
A small tempest at the Energy Department this week. The Wall Street Journal reported that Secretary Hazel O'Leary had spent more than $40,000 to rate the reporters who covered her agency, which had Republican House members like Steve Chabot of Ohio baying for her scalp.
If the Journal story is accurate, the Secretary of Energy should not remain in office one more day, not one more hour, not one more minute.
Calm down, urged O'Leary. We never threatened anybody or attempted any kind of censorship.
No enemies list, no gumshoes, no investigators.
In the end, the White House decided to slap O'Leary's wrist, ordering the Energy Department to return the money it spent to the Treasury. Across the Capitol, it was whitewater as usual, and it appeared the committee investigating President Clinton's real estate dealings may have struck a nerve when it called former White House counsel Lloyd Cutler, suggesting Cutler helped investigate a situation that he himself had helped create. More from ABC's Tony Sargent.
Cutler denied Republican suggestions that he or other White House staffers exploited information from a government ethics probe last year by using it to arm themselves for testimony on Capitol Hill.
We did not cover up any fact concerning any person.
Cutler said the White House and Treasury Department didn't have time and personnel to run separate investigations on related issues, so they shared some information to meet a pressing deadline. Tony Sargent, ABC News at the Senate Whitewater hearings.
From the federal prison where Oklahoma bombing suspects Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols are being held, word from Nichols that he may have inadvertently helped McVeigh. Nichols told a reporter that he had showed McVeigh pictures and diagrams of bombs and had accompanied him on a visit to the Oklahoma City Federal Building. Meanwhile, McVeigh's lawyer, Stephen Jones, says he may ask for a trial delay, saying he's not getting information he needs.
We have advised the government that if we don't complete discovery by the end of November, that we will have no other alternative than to ask that the trial be continued so so that we may be adequately prepared.
In Boston's Charleston section, hard by Old Ironsides and Bunker Hill, some shooters didn't wait till they saw the whites of anyone's eyes. More from reporter Carl Stevens.
It was just a regular lunch hour at the 99 restaurant, the most popular restaurant in this part of town. Witnesses tell me two guys walked in with guns, and they knew exactly what their purpose was. They took aim, and they started firing. What happened? Homicide Captain Ed McNally.
We can confirm that there are four individuals who have been murdered. There were a couple of individuals who are suspects that were over at Homicide.
A fifth person was taken over to Mass General.
Americans were in trouble across the world. In Okinawa, where three servicemen pleaded guilty to various charges in a Japanese court in connection with the rape of a Japanese schoolgirl. Only one serviceman admitted to actually raping the girl, which prompted the mothers of the other two to hold a news conference in Atlanta. Barbara Cannon is the mother of Private First Class Kendrick Ledette.
My son is innocent. He says he is, and I believe him. I do not believe he is capable of committing any type of crime.
The mothers said their sons were the victims of racism in Japan because they are African Americans. In Dayton, Ohio, the doors remain closed on the Bosnia peace talks. They only popped open briefly to reveal Serbian President Slobodan Milosevic going shopping for new shoes, surrounded by so much security that one bystander thought he was a country music star. There was no word on how close the warring parties were to signing a permanent peace accord. But in Brussels, the United States did reach agreement with Russia on policing any accord that comes out of Dayton. ABC's Mark Brender reports from the Pentagon.
Russian troops will serve in the American sector. They will take orders from NATO's commander, U.S. Army General George Jalwin. But the orders will pass through the office of a Russian three-star general. And when they do, the NATO letterhead comes off. That way, Russian politicians can say their troops are taking part, but are not under NATO's direct command.
Good news in the fight against AIDS this week. FDA Commissioner David Kessler announced that his agency is speeding a new class of drugs toward AIDS patients.
The new class of drugs that we're considering are called protease inhibitors. These are the first drugs that were designed specifically against the AIDS virus.
Kessler said the protease inhibitors don't cure AIDS, but they do seem to extend the lives of those infected with the virus.
These drugs work by decreasing the rate at which the virus multiplies or divides. It really slows down the replication of the virus.
And even as progress was reported against the AIDS epidemic, the American Medical Association reported another terrible disease. AMA President Dr. Lonnie Bristow.
There is a silent, violent epidemic going on in our nation in the form of sexual abuse.
Bristow said over 70,000 American women are victims of sexual abuse every year, and he urged doctors to recognize the disease and treat it.
Anytime a doctor has a patient who recoils from the laying on of hands, this ought to be a signal that there are some deeper psychological problems.
The U.S. Naval Academy reported this week it has a drug problem. Captain Tom Jerkowski of the Academy said two dozen midshipmen are being investigated for illegal drug use.
A couple weeks ago, two of our midshipmen were apprehended for purchase and possession of illicit drugs at a location off the Naval Academy. And at that point, we do not look kindly upon drug use in the Navy. We have a zero tolerance policy. We said we were going to conduct a aggressive investigation, and we're also going to test the entire brigade through urinalysis testing.
Great happiness in another part of Maryland this week as Art Modell, owner of the up-to-now Cleveland Browns, announced he will move his team to Baltimore. Modell noted that Baltimore had lost its beloved Colts more than 11 years ago when the team pulled up stakes and headed for Indianapolis.
I know what you went through 11 years ago, because that's exactly what's happening in Cleveland right now, and I am deeply, deeply sorry from the bottom of my heart.
But if the Browns were leaving the shores of Lake Erie, they weren't going without a fight. Mayor Michael White of Cleveland.
We have earned the right to keep the Browns. We have earned the right to tell our story. And we have earned the right to take this issue to the High Council of the NFL. And that's just what we're going to do in January of 1996.
As for the Cleveland fans, accustomed of late to backing winners, Steve Heilton said Modell shouldn't plan on a visit to Municipal Stadium this year.
Our Modell has screwed this town, in my opinion. I think he had this design for years and ran the team in the ground on purpose.
A sentiment echoed by barbershop owner Joe Sportsman.
I'm glad to get rid of him. He ain't no good. You guys can have him.
If he hangs up his stocking in Cleveland, Art Modell is likely to find a lump of coal in it from the fans. But if you get a lump of coal for Christmas this year, consider yourself honored. It might, just might, be a lump recovered from the wreckage of the Titanic. George Tulloch of RMS Titanic Incorporated confirms the Great Liner's fuel is for sale, lump by lump.
We're making available to the public the coal that we've picked up from the debris field. During the expeditions out to the Titanic in the recovering of the objects which constitute the collection, the artifact collection, we also recovered some coal so that we could share that with the public.
Here's a first. Double perfection on the college entrance tests. Chris and Courtney Salthouse of Chamblee, Georgia are twins, and so are their SAT scores. Each twin scored a perfect 1600. Needless to say, they're checking out the best colleges.
We're both looking at very competitive schools. I'm looking at MIT, Caltech, Rice, maybe Georgia Tech, the hometown favorite.
I'm also looking at some pretty tough schools, some Ivy League schools like Harvard and Princeton and stuff. We don't plan on going to school together, though.
A Nation remembers when World News This Week continues.
Hey, it's time to play What a Dope, the show where kids who smoke marijuana try to answer incredibly simple questions. Okay, for $100, what did you eat for breakfast, Brian?
I forget.
Too bad, Brian. Let's move on. For $500, what is your first name? Debbie.
Brian.
Oh, I'm sorry, Debbie. The answer is Debbie, your own first name.
Really?
That's okay. Just try and concentrate for, two or three seconds, okay?
Okay.
Okay. For $1,000, what day comes after Sunday? Brian.
French toast.
That's incorrect, Brian. And guess what?
Give me a hit, man.
You lose.
Wow.
Oh, wow is right because marijuana has made you a complete imbecile.
I always wanted to be that.
Hey, tune in again tomorrow and remember, if you smoke marijuana,
you're on a dope.
Brought to you by the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
A bugler blew taps at Arlington National Cemetery as President Clinton laid a wreath and the nation saluted its veterans. This year, a special observance, the final salute to the men and women who fought World War II. President Clinton spoke to them.
On this hillside of honor and respect, let us once again humbly thank our veterans for answering the call to duty, for what they did in times of crisis and war, and what they did to preserve the peace.
The observances at Arlington were solemn, as is proper. But in New York, a big blowout billed as the nation's parade drew up to a million people to Fifth Avenue to honor veterans of all wars, including Herbert W. Young, who fought in the trenches in World War I and rode in the lead car at the age of 109. Not quite that old, every serviceman's favorite comedian, Bob Hope, saluted the troops in Branson, Missouri.
I think they appreciate the veterans for what they did for them, you know, for all the work they did to save the country. And I find that true everywhere I go.
Those are the people and stories that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Steve Jones and Stu Chamberlain. I'm Chuck Sievertson, ABC News, New York.
This has been a presentation of ABC News. More Americans get their news from ABC News than from any other source.